My guest in the second hour is certainly a legend, John McEwen, the String Wizard. John's going to visit with us in the second hour and discuss a lot of new projects he's got going on. In addition to still the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? It just keeps going and getting stronger at the top of many, many charts currently. We'll talk to John about that. Always enjoy having John McEwen on the show. John McEwen, you're going to enjoy this. I always enjoy John McEwen. Thanks so much, John, for being available. He knows this. I've told him before, he's got an open invitation to appear on Unreal Bluegrass. My guest today, I'm always happy to have John McEwen. John, welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass.
Hey, thank you. It's always good to be here.
You know, I was looking back the last time we chatted. By the way, everybody should know this. John should know this. John has an open invitation to appear on Unreal Bluegrass. I don't know how many shows we've done, John, but they're always different. We've talked about the book, A Life I Picked. We went through that in detail in a program. A fascinating book. We've gone through the album we just heard a cut from, Made in Brooklyn, before it came out. We discussed it and how that came together. We'll talk about that some more. But the last time, John, I talked to you was in December of last year, and I had to get you on the phone because Ken Burns' country music documentary was running, and it felt like it was like subtitled The John McEwen Show.
Not quite. Thank you.
Well, there was so much. There was so much great information available to the effort that became the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's Circle album. I mean, and so it just keeps going on and on. And I know there's some new stuff going on with that, but why don't we touch on that just a little bit, and then we'll talk about other things.
Oh, what did you want to know?
I want to know that it's from the country music documentary, which was brilliant, and you did play. Don't downplay your role. You played a serious role in discussing all the artists because the Circle album was so comprehensive at the time. There was nothing like the Will the Circle album before or since. I mean, there's been a couple after, but nothing like that to begin with.
They always say, and like the Circle album,
they
got together in the studio.
That's right.
You know? It's been the dark side of the moon of country music for years. And now, thanks to Ken Burns' show and episode 6 being called Will the Circle Be Unbroken, it's number 1 on 3 Amazon charts, traditional and country and folk, and it's been that for 5 months.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, that album, is it just 50 years? Has it passed 50 years that it was released?
No, in 2022, it'll be 50 years since it came out. It's amazing. And Ken Burns, Deaton Duncan did a really nice job. And it's rerunning this
It's
month.
Rerunning now, so it'll never come off of the chart. And the album was...
The show, the Ken Burns show, is rerunning. They're running 1 a week on PBS.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying, the album now will never. As long as they have room to run that again, you'll get another kick. I've never seen another. I remember when this album came out. We may have discussed this before, but when it came out, it was a double album, which was at
triple.
The time, triple. Oh my gosh! Well, that's why I couldn't buy it right away then. I didn't have that much cash in my pocket. So you look at it, and it said there's a couple labels on it, and one of them said if you only own one country album, this is the one to own. Maybe that was the sticker they added on in the stores, but it really did. I mean, it had a lot of bluegrass, but you had so many great stars from the country, and that's why Ken Burns had to come back to you, because you did it all those years ago. You put everybody in a studio and just kind of let things roll.
And that's part of what I'm doing on the road right now. I take out Les Thompson, an original Dirt Band member, the guy that called me in 1966 and said, hey, the guys at the music store are getting together. We're calling it Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. You want to join? And that was in July. And then I'm also taking John Cable. He was in the band in the late 70s when we were the first American group to go to Russia. And 28 sold-out shows. And he was there a couple years. And Matt Karchulis, who's a wonderful singer, player, mandola, guitar, and stuff.
And by the way, since you mentioned the trip to Russia, I've had the joy, John, sitting in an audience. You have footage from that trip, and you discuss the entire thing into Russia. And if you ever do that again, and someone can see it, or you can have reference to those films, I saw it in Raleigh years ago, and it was amazing because it was so long ago, and that things were so different between the two countries.
Yeah, look up YouTube. Those of you listening, look up "Return to Dismal Swamp," YouTube. thing that I edited together a bunch of the photos, this whole story, crammed into 3.5 minutes with Dismal Swamp behind it. And that's an example of what I do on stage, which is a multimedia show using footage from the past and the Circle album. And I tell the story of the early Dirt Band and the Circle album and play new music along with it. And it's really fun.
John, one thing about people, if they haven't seen you perform live, people need to realize that you're very relaxed. You do a wonderful bit of storytelling. There's always some humor, just because it's just the way you are.
Humor is funny.
It's always a great thing.
Humor is funny.
I know where you're going with this. I can almost guess where your jokes are coming. I've seen you so many times, but you're right. Humor is funny.
You know, there's things that are obvious, like a day without sunshine is like night.
There you go. But I always enjoy seeing John. You show up with different instruments. You show up with something that I've never seen before or since. It's has to be a unique instrument. The guitar thing with it looks like maybe the great ancestor of something that Prince would play.
Well, it's a guitar made in South Africa. It's really a good one. It's called the Smooth Talker. And I've been playing it for a couple of years as my main stage guitar. And sound companies during soundcheck always say, "What is that? That's the best sounding acoustic guitar." And so I keep it.
John, I
play a Deering banjo. Janet Deering called me and said, "Do you want to have a John McEwen model?" And I said, "Well, sure, Janet." And she did the specifications that I wanted. And I could retire my Florentine off the road because this one plays better.
Listen, if Janet called me and said, "Would you want a banjo of any kind?" I would take it. I don't know. Right now, I don't know of another company. I'm talking to John McEwen here. We're going to cut the one more song from the Made in Brooklyn. But I don't know of another. Well, there can't be another instrument manufacturer that has blanketed from introductory models to the highest end you can find of banjos, not only just 5 strings, but 6 strings and 4 strings. Deering Banjo is just has such a footprint on the world on banjo-type instruments.
Yeah, and it's really a homegrown company in San Diego. Yeah. Jamie Deering just became CEO. She's the daughter of Janet and Greg, and it's just really a neat company.
I was so happy for Jamie. I got to know her pretty well on the, I guess, all 4 years I was on the IBMA board. Jamie served on it. Ooh. I just really enjoyed getting to know her. I was so happy when the inevitable happened that she would take over, and she'll do a great job of being the CEO and getting out in front of everything. You've been performing a lot, I know. Talk a little bit about some of the shows. You were mentioning off the air about a show in Indianapolis or some things you've done live.
All my dates right now are on my Facebook or our website, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Ludington, Michigan, Indianapolis for the first week of April, and Nashville, Indiana. And I'm looking forward to those with the whole band, and got dates after that. We've got one in Lubbock, Texas, and one in Winsboro, Texas, and then some in Florida. I'm headlining the Florida Folk Festival this year.
Are you really?
And closing out the Friday night, and that's a real honor.
One of the things from talking to you and also from reading your book, The Life I Picked, is that you understand how to run a road, a band on the road, and how to get them out and how to get them in a place and how to keep track of what's going on. I think you had a lot of responsibility that early with the Dirt Band.
Yeah, I the first 11 years of Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, I was also the road manager. I was the only one, when we started, I was the only one old enough to rent a car. So I had to rent the car. And then I had to know where to drive it. And I had to know who we're playing for and all that stuff. So it was like road managing 101, started in 1966, 67. And it went on from there until I found the word delegate in the dictionary and hired a road manager.
John, by the way, I still love that book. Well, the first time we went through it, I had an advanced copy you sent me, and I had a million post-it notes everywhere throughout the book of things that I wanted. And we talked about a lot of them, but there's so many great stories in that. And I'd say this, too. Listen, a lot of performers send me books. Some of them are bios, some are just stories that they put together. But John McEwen writes a good story. He not only tells it, he writes a good story. It's an entertaining book to read.
Inside my life, there have been a lot of things that stood out as stories, standalone stories. And it's amazed me. When I put the final manuscript together, everything in the timeline, and I had to read it the week before it was going to go to print, I couldn't put it down. It was like, oh, my God, this is a lucky guy. And it really has been, from playing at Mickey Mouse's funeral to playing for 20,000 people in the middle of a cornfield, and not just dirt band stuff either.
Oh, sure.
Things about what went on.
John McEwen is my guest right now. You're also my second term out of my mouth on a discussion is String Wizard, because I know you did some things with that, and it really helps people understand how many instruments that you play. If they see you play, they're liable to see just about anything with a string on it.
Well, I get by on other things, but with people like Billy Strings out there, I don't see why anybody wants to play anymore.
and he's just getting started.
Yeah, he's great, and David Greer is great, and Jack Lawrence. Jack Lawrence played with me last October at the Boone Center, whatever, for the cultural arts, the new Boone Center. I sold out the show there. It was a tribute to the place, and I had the band with me, and had some people sit in. Rodney Dillard sat in. I called him up and said, Rodney, would you do this show with me? And he says, well, yeah, we're in Kingsport the night before. And he came over, and I wouldn't be talking to you, Steve, if it wasn't for Rodney Dillard.
Well, let me tell you this. Very soon Rodney's going to be on Unreal Bluegrass. That's in the works.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah. So we'll have some fun talking with him about all the stuff that he's done. And I might even mention your name, as having been a frequent guest. You never know. Hey, John, I'd like to maybe let's cut to another number from the Made in Brooklyn. I think that Brooklyn Crossing is one that you may want to describe.
I like Brooklyn Crossing because it was the first one we recorded using the system of one microphone and playing to it, and being told by the engineer, if somebody else is soloing and you can't hear them, then you're playing too loud, because what you're playing in the room is what we're recording. And with that one microphone, we got positioned around it, and I made up this song called Brooklyn Crossing, because we were recording in a church in Brooklyn, which has such natural echo. You don't have to add any. And it was really quiet. And we were recording and we ran through it once, and he shifted a couple of us around, and I'm playing guitar in D minor tuning, and a metal guitar, one of those national type of guitars, and Jay Unger's on fiddle, yeah. And David Amram and is doing his thing. It was just Skip Ward is a bass player, never made a mistake daring him. And the whole time he seems to know the songs before you do. And Skip Ward I used on The Crow with Steve, the other Steve Martin.
Yeah, the other Steve Martin. Who's on Made in Brooklyn?
Yeah, he played on a Warren Zevon song Matt wanted to do. Yeah. And the record company guy said, here, you give him the check. I said, that's your company. You give him. I'm not going to give Steve Martin a check for $250. I said, you give him that check, and I promise you it will be cashed quicker than you realize.
you told a story once before about when this album was being made, that he came in, and either he had to change the key, and he had to kind of catch up. He'd already been practicing, I think, a part for it. He changed the key, and he just had to transpose everything, and once he got through it, then he was fine to go on record. And the point of it being, it didn't take that long.
No, we rehearsed for 4 hours the day before at his apartment in New York, and he did his part, and it was really, really good. I couldn't, since we're recording with one microphone, there were no overdubs, no fixes. You couldn't go in and go, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
you had to live with what's on the tape.
And this is on it's on Chesky, right?
Yes, Chesky Records. Okay. Now, when I was making this album, I called my buddy Bob Edwards at Skywalker Sound. He's been head of sound design there for 25 years, you know, George Lucas's place.
Yeah.
I said, hey, Bob, we're making an album for Chesky Records. He goes, Chesky? Chesky Records? There's only two things you need to say to Mr. Chesky. I said, what's that, Bob? He says, thank you, sir. And what was the other one? Oh, well, yes, sir, and thank you, sir.
All right. Well, that's all you need then. That's all you need. It's a great album. The sound is. I wanted to get that in there because the sound really is.
Well, he uses, at Skywalker Ranch, he said he uses a Chesky record or two to check his system every morning because they're recorded so well. And the Record One Stereophile Magazine's Record of the Month and the Americana Award from the Independent Music Association.
Well, we hinted to this. Let's play then Brooklyn Crossing, and John McEwen, I'll be right back with you after it ends, and we're going to talk a little bit more, then I'm going to let you go.
All right.
There, you just heard Brooklyn Crossing, so well described by my guest today, John McEwen. John, that album, we've gone through it and through it and through it, and there's so many unique features to it and things you always wanted to do. There's kind of a longer version of a thing made very famous by Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Bojangles. I knew you kind of do a longer version. You have a conversation leading up to that, which I like that little bit.
Yeah, David Bromberg and Matt Carsona switched off on the vocals because Bromberg said, you know, I've got a solo. I've always wanted to record for that song, but, you know, I can't record this Bojangles again, but let's do it again. And Matt, you sing the last couple verses, and I'll play the backup and then do the solo. So that was fun.
It was, it's a neat, I love the story leading into it, and you do this so well. And I mention this to people that if they're going to go see John McEwen, you have all these good stories about things that happened during all of your travels and travails and all the things that you've done in music. And just like that story there with talking to David Bromberg about Mr. Bojangles, you have so many great things to talk. And I don't think they're the same all the time. I think, John, from my knowing you, they just kind of bubble to the top as they strike you.
I like to ask the audience about halfway through the show, are there any questions? And then they don't respond because they think I'm kidding, but then I'll say it again. And somebody will come up with a question like, what was Jerry Garcia like? Or, you know, some weird question. Why did Bill Monroe turn down the Circle album? I heard that, you know. And that leads you into a whole avenue, a whole story of what happened, you know. What was the 60s like?
Yeah, sure. So how much time do we have? How much time would we have to describe what the 60s were like? Of course,
the best way I can describe it was a hippie was driving down Sunset Boulevard, turning left on Fairfax, and a guy in a Mercedes almost hit him. He was going too fast. And they screeched, they stopped, they didn't hit. The hippie gets out and stands there, and the guy gets out of his car and is standing there, and the hippie yells, may your life be long and tedious.
That's almost like a veiled Chinese curse or something, where, you know, may you live an interesting time.
He didn't call him a jerk or anything.
No, that's right. Peace. I've talked about this before, John. We try to put, for people who aren't familiar with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and everything that John's done since and around that time, I don't know what kind of, in today's world of radio, of course, there's very little radio, but I don't know where they would put you guys. You kind of might have been the first, I don't know, was it the first Americana? Was it the first Americana alternative?
Often been called Americana, country rock, California country rock. And what I would do on the Dirt Band album would end up folky. I mean, I recorded on the Uncle Charlie album in 1970.
That's,
I recorded
one of my favorites.
Randy Van Rag and Clinch Mountain Backstep. I had Ralph Stanley come up to me at a festival from behind. And he said, this is 1974 or something. And he said, John McEwen, how's that five-string treating you? And I said, well, pretty good, Ralph, if I may call you Ralph. I'm just curious. Well, I appreciate the fact that you know my name, but I was stammering because I was in awe because it's the first time I met Ralph Stanley. And he said, well, you know, you put that Clinch Mountain Backstep on that album, and that was the biggest royalty check I'd ever seen.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it still probably is, because it gets played through there almost more than anything else.
So that was kind of a fun way to meet somebody. And that's how I met Earl Scruggs. Randy Van Ragg was on Uncle Charlie, and when I met Earl, he said, I wanted to meet the boy who played Randy Van Ragg the way I intended to.
Yeah. Well, that's say no more after that. You don't want any more coming after that, because it doesn't get any better than that.
Hey, Steve, mm-hmm. I'll send you I have that on videotape.
Do you really?
The first time Earl came to see the Dirt Band with the whole family. Thanks to Gary Scruggs saying to his dad on the way to the Opry, hey, Dad, let's not go to the Opry. Let's go to the Dirt Band show. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's playing Vanderbilt. Well, I'd like to see them. And they were going to go to the Opry that night, but Gary drove them to the Vanderbilt concert.
I will be in touch with you through email. I want to see that. I want to see that, and I want to make use of it as best that I can. So if you can do that, I'll shoot you an email.
I played Randy Van Ragg in the dressing room with Earl sitting there watching. It was really...
you don't know how you could do that. I don't. I guess you just.
Oh, it was fun.
Yeah, he was.
And it led to the 9 months later. I asked Earl if he'd record with the Dirt Band. He said I'd be proud to, and that started the whole circle thing. Which it's amazing, Steve, how that simple question led to Doc Watson saying yes when I asked him, to led to the album coming together and all that stuff, and now I'm still talking about it.
Yeah, well, it is really it really is. If And I do remember it might have been an added sticker in the store or the venue I was looking at. But it said, if you only own one country album, this is the one. And they called it country. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot for a little, poor little guy in Kentucky to pay for three. But I eventually got the set of them. And it never grows old. The interplay in between the musicians. And when you start playing and Jimmy Martin shoots a little bit at you there about...
Earl never did do that.
You've been playing about 15 years, ain't you? You just plow straight ahead. You just keep it going. But everybody was on that thing. I guess everybody that you could possibly think of. And the recording time, once you got everyone to agree to do it, how long were you actually in the recording studio? Do you remember?
6 days.
6 days.
And
man,
we did 34 songs, and we were scheduled to record 8 hours a day. We only recorded about 4 or 5 because people were getting done early. When you're recording 2-track, which we were doing, once you finish the song, you're done. You don't mix it. You don't add to it. You don't do anything. It's 2-track. And you know how long it takes to record a 3-minute song?
3 minutes.
About 3 minutes.
There you go, folks. Math by John McEwen.
Yeah. You know, I remember Travis going at the end of I Am a Pilgrim, you got that, Bill? Yeah, okay, well, let's do the next one.
You know? Keep going. You tell a story in one of your albums where you're kind of on the road. It's live. Which one was it? The String Wizards. Is it one or two, or is it the one where you're kind of you're traveling? It might be John McEwen and the L.A. String.
That's the live one.
And you're talking about getting Merle for the Nitty Gritty album.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's a great story.
He was playing his guitar. He got his guitar out of the closet, and it was all out of tune and everything, and he was stumbling through tuning it and asking his wife which one was out and all kinds of things. And then I thought we got there too late, you know. He looked up with a grin after about 2 minutes and ripped into Cannonball Rag.
Yeah, it's like he was just kind of pulling your leg a little bit.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, that album, I wanted to tell you the correct name. It's John McEwen, Round Trip, Live in L.A.
Round Trip, the L.A. String.
Yeah.
That's one of several albums I've made that seems to have gone by the wayside, or you know, it's got my best version of Opus 36 I've ever played, a very hard classical song, the hardest song I know, and I played it perfect, I think. And it's live. I like live because that's it. You know, I like using the studio as a tool and making a piece of art out of something, you know, adding to it, overdubbing, but live is really another. It's a wonderful thing to do.
You know, and really, John, you're so good at the live having that contact with people, and even in the audience in that live album, the Round Trip album, you just interact well. I mean, you've been doing it for so long, but I also think you always enjoy it.
Well, yeah, duh. Check out my website, and you'll see where I'm coming.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do that.
And I hope people show up. Nashville, Indiana should be really good. It's a nice performing arts hall and so forth. Well, one of my favorite cuts is on Stream Wizards 2. It's Red Wing. And it was a first take. And I'm really proud of the fact that Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush, David Greer, Roy Husky, and Stuart Duncan came and played with me on that whole album, and it was just really fun. That's an old record, though. But the Red Wing, I had a guy tell me back in the 60s, if you can't play Red Wing, you can't play music. So I learned Red Wing when I was 18 years
old.
Hey,
listen, let me ask you this. I want you to pick out one more song before we leave, but I'm going to talk to Rodney Dillard in a couple weeks. What do you want me to ask Rodney that he would not expect?
Something will come to mind.
I sprung that on you.
No, it's so complicated. Rodney will have a great answer for anything you ask him. Ask him if he's frustrated with the fact that the Dillards were overlooked by the bluegrass community.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
And how long it took. I got the Dillards inducted into the Hall of Fame, the IBMA Hall of Fame, but along with Orrin Friesen helping. We got that done, and it wasn't that long ago, but it should have been much earlier. And there's been people that have recorded their songs.
Everybody has. How many people think that the old home place was originally from J.D. Crow in the New South? I mean, that's just the way it is. I think the Dillards is what happened to them. They were in the folk thing. They were in the college folk scene so early. I just wonder if people missed them because they were so good. And they were out west, and they had a lot of attraction out there. But I don't know the reason, except that I remember when I first got Front Porch Bluegrass, I couldn't stop playing it.
That's Back Porch Bluegrass.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I found a different one. I found a fake version. But yeah, that very first one they did, I thought, well, this is all just magical stuff. This is all, man, well, you knew that. You knew that.
Mostly first takes on those records, recorded by the same guy, Dino Lapis, that engineered the Circle album. We flew him to Nashville to engineer. And it was recorded at Third Street Recorders in Hollywood, Back Porch Bluegrass.
Well, John, it's always a blast, and I will always chat with you whenever I can find you and get you nailed down. I want to let you go. I know you're a busy guy. Thanks for the birds in the background. We had a little bit of a nature serenade in the background with the birds, but I want you to pick one more tune from Made in Brooklyn. We talked about it a little bit off of the air. As I say goodbye to you, I want to play one more tune from John McEwen's Made in Brooklyn, and I think you got one.
I would pick I Rose Up. Features Martha Redbone, a great singer. Matt Karstonis, a great singer, and John Cowan, an equally John Cowan great singer. And it's a poem written by William Blake, the British poet, in the 1800s, that I set to music, thinking that, well, if William Blake had emigrated to Appalachia, he might have gotten some pickers around him and turned that into a song. So I took his poem and turned it into a song. And it's I Rose Up.
It's a great one to rise up to. I mean, I think it's very inspirational in the sound, and of course that's what you did it for. It's a great words to write a great tune to. It definitely
they're different words too. Yeah. I've got mental health and mental wealth. It's like it's different words of 1800 with music of the early 1900s behind it.
John, I'm going to say goodbye to you. We'll leave the listeners with I Rose Up from Made in Brooklyn. And, gosh, I hope to see you around. I know you're everywhere. I just got to find a place and triangulate you so I can catch you out there on the road somewhere.
Oh, that'd be great. Right. And I hope some of your listeners come to a show.
They will go
If they do, identify yourself.
That's right. Yeah. Get your papers out. No, don't do that. Just identify. Just say hi. Just to identify yourself from Unreal Bluegrass. All right. John, I'm going to let you go, man. Thanks so much, and I'll catch you down the road.
Thank you, Steve. All right. I'll talk to you later.
See you. Bye.